Hi there, and welcome to another edition of the Romance Program. I'm volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds. I've got one story coming up this hour from True Love magazine. It's called I Won't Let the Twister Take My Family. Here's the story. A second twister came, once again bringing death and destruction to our family. 20 years apart, both killers, death whipping across the heartland. My two children, Grace, who was 12 years old, and Noah, who was 9, were my first thought when the sky on the horizon became tarnished with a sickly green hue. I stared at the garish display and knew at once what it meant. I'd been there for the first tornado, the one that had taken away my grandfather. Now I could feel my skin crawl with panic. They always say the rush of a tornado sounds like a freight train, and it did that first time. Now another freight train was coming through. I dropped the daffodils I'd been planting by the front gate, quickly scanned the yard. Grace was over by the silo playing with Hannah, our collie. Noah was down by the creek fishing. I yelled out their names 2-3 times. The old root cellar was by the barn, site of the first homestead, the only possible shelter. Run! I shouted, waving my arms wildly. Twister, there's a twister coming. In that instant, I was torn by my desperate need to help my children reach safety and my gripping concern for grandmother, Hermione, who was in the house. Grandma, at 82 years of age, was hard of hearing. She'd never been able to hear my frantic shouts. I would have to run to the house to warn her, but with Noah still down by the creek, there was no choice. I had to save my children. I could see Noah. He'd just caught a fish. In this instant, ordinary pursuits, the dog, the fish, were obstacles, clouding minds, blocking the way, holding my children back from seeking safety. Didn't they understand that mere seconds could mean the difference between life and death? I was screaming as I ran toward the creek. The wind had died suddenly, leaving a vacuum of deathly silence in the wake. Another sure sign of the approaching threat. Finally, Noah looked up, initially confused, then nodding in dawning comprehension. He grabbed his bucket and started running for the house. No, I waved him off, gesturing frantically toward the root cellar. The wind had returned. A smattering of hard raindrops pelted down violently. Grace had also caught the fear in my voice. She was the first to make it to the cellar door. Once I was absolutely certain they were both safely inside, I could run to the house for Hermione. Hurry, hurry, Noah, I screamed, run. The wind had risen to a howling roar. Together we all clawed at the heavy wooden door bedded in the earth, slamming it open hard against the ground. I literally pushed the children inside, hair whipping around my face as I watched them both scramble down the steps. Hannah went in right behind them as I threw Noah's bucket down the rickety stairs in front of me. Precious seconds, they were gone. I turned, thinking of running toward the house. No, Mama, Grace implored when she looked at me from the cellar opening and realized what I was about to do. I turned to look then at the house, my final glimpse as the black rolling, towering demon neared, filling the very sky with its wrath. There on the great front porch of our centuries-old farmhouse stood Grandmother Hermione, her arms pushed out in front of her, her head shaking no at me. A red wagon was picked up by the wind and went cartwheeling behind the house. Flower pots on the porch tumbled about like birds without wings. Horrifying sound of branches snapping behind me. Grandma Hermione stood her ground, raising her hands, palms up, as if to welcome the howling storm. I stood in place, transfixed by the horrific sight of her in the distance, framed by the angry midnight of the sky. Grace and Noah reached up from the cellar and yanked at my skirt, pulling me down the stairs. Hermione wasn't leaving the porch. In that horrifying split second, I knew it was impossible for me to try and reach her. The freight train was here. The door over our heads started to rattle like it would rip off its hinges, just as Grace, Noah, and I managed to loosen the rusted bolt and heaved the sliding lock into place. I pulled my children close to me, and the three of us crawled back into the farthest, deepest recess of the cellar with the soulless, deadly wind gaining momentum, keening and wailing over our heads. Hannah huddled beside us. It was only a few minutes before the wind dropped suddenly, leaving a surreal, deathly silence in the wake, and we were able to take sight of what was left. I strained to unfasten the bolted lock and push the door outward with all my strength. Grace was crying uncontrollably. Noah looked as if he was in shock. Hannah leapt out of the shelter and trotted around in a circle, trying to find her bearings in the new, forever different world. "Hermione!" I cried, but there was no answer. The place on the porch where she'd last been standing was gone. The wooden pillars, the floorboards, all of it. I fell to my knees and wept in the grass. Why had she stood there without trying to escape? The cancer, perhaps. She'd always believed it was going to take her soon. Maybe she'd felt this was a better way, but how could I ever really know? All I knew was that moments ago she'd been alive. Now she'd disappeared. Grace knelt beside me. I put my arms around her and spoke softly. "It'll be all right, honey. Don't you worry." A rush of futile words meant to comfort and console. Noah walked into the distance, searching for his grandmother, but there was nothing out there in the open fields. The barn was gone. A portion of the house had been completely sheared off. The creek willows were down. We walked around in a daze, searching for pieces of our lives, but the twister had even carried the loose wreckage away. Finally, the three of us sat side by side on what was left of the porch, unable to move, unable to absorb the reality. Clint Tobias, our neighbor, wheeled the pickup truck into our driveway with brakes screeching. I could see the relief on his face when he saw us. "You all right, Evangeline? Where's Hermione? He called out, rushing toward us. I shook my head. He saw my tears and pulled me toward him. "I'm sorry," he said. I couldn't reach her in time. I sobbed, guilt closing over me like a shroud. Grace tugged at me. "You couldn't have saved her, Mama. You saw. We all saw. She didn't want to come, Mama. And you're pregnant, Mama. You couldn't take the chance." Her words hit home with Clint. He stopped. He stepped back, regarding me closely. "Evangeline?" he questioned. "Yes," I nodded. 4 months, I turned away from him and hugged Grace close to me. "You'll be okay," Clint managed. "Let's get you all over to my place for the time being." "Has anyone else been hurt?" I asked. "Far as I can tell, no," he answered. "It destroyed all the trees in the grove near town. Cut a quarter mile wide swath over mostly farmland. Got the Kilroy trailer, but nobody was home, thank God. Took the Faga Baker's barn and most of their 12 head of cattle. We've got to search for her Hermione. She might be in the house. Maybe. I take hold, Evangelina. Or Evangeline is her name. Clint urged in a strong, gentle voice. "We'll have a look around. You kids stay close. We'll just see what we can do." What we could do was nothing. A half mile into the field, we found some debris, but it was mostly wood-framed planks. One of them stabbed deeply into the plowed earth like a Leviathan's arrow. Tremors of shock and rising panic shook my body, but I had to search. I just had to. Finally, Clint took my hand. "Evangeline, there's no hope for this. Come with me." We staggered back to the house. I pushed open the front door, and inside, half the house was standing, half was gone. It was surreal, beyond imagining. The Twister's arbitrary nature had left the piano in its place. The candelabra on the dining room table hadn't moved an inch, but the walls on two sides were torn away, revealing open blue, empty sky. "Time to go," Clint said. "It's dangerous to be in here. Please, Evangeline." Magazines, hooks, and the family Bible were right where they'd always been on the bookshelf. I took the Bible and backed away from the devastation. "Hermione wouldn't want to leave the Bible," I murmured, hardly aware of what I was saying or doing. I knew I was in shock, but I couldn't get past it. I made it outside and stumbled toward the tenant house where hired workers used to live during harvest time. "We can stay here, can't we? We don't have to leave," I pleaded. The farmland itself had been sold off years ago. But this tract of land facing the road was still ours. I couldn't bear to abandon it, not now. Clint peered into the broken windows of the dilapidated brick one-story building. "Maybe so, but not now, Evangeline. We can send a search party out soon as we get back to my place to make sure about Hermione. You weren't the only one around here who loved her." His words brought fresh tears to my eyes. "For now," he said, "you've got the children to think about." At that moment, Noah came up behind us, and with the clear vision of the young, he said, "Grandma's gone to be with Grandpa, hasn't she?" In my shock and hysteria, I wondered for a moment if Grandpa had brought this second tornado for just that purpose, to bring Grandma Hermione home to him. I shook away the feeling, stared blankly at Noah, and nodded, unable to speak. Instead, I glanced around one last time at the ruins of our life. It occurred to me later that night that our lives were already in ruins, had been for years. The kids were sound asleep in the big brass bed, and I was sitting on the borrowed rollaway in the Tobias' spare bedroom, the Bible in my lap. Aimlessly, I'd been leafing through the pages when I saw it, all the names, the family. Through the long day, I'd made all the phone calls I could. The sheer emotional toll of it had been utterly devastating. I hadn't been able to reach Jake, my husband. We were separated. He was on the road, but I'd left word. I didn't know how to reach my mother. The others had drawn all the feeling out of me. Now I sought desperately for some vague grasp of solace. But family memories, the legacies of untold years, had taken possession of my thoughts. Such a large family in those long ago days, but in the time of the first twister, it was a family already on its way to oblivion. Things happen, some of them so terrible they can rob us of the past and the future all at once. The names were right there, written in longhand on the opening pages of the great old Bible in my lap. Grandfather Wilbur and Grandmother Hermione Wilder, married 1938, 4 children, Robert, Margaret, and Judy. Then the marriages, Robert and Bernadette, James and Ruth, Margaret and Dwight, Judy and Monroe. Margaret and Dwight were my parents. My birth was duly recorded on the page. Evangeline Wilder Collins, born May 6, 1968. Those growing up days had been so sweet, so good. Holidays were joyous. I loved it all. In those days, I'd been too young to have a clear understanding of the issues that were tearing the family apart. Now, in the quiet of night, with the shock wearing off, it seemed like the first tornado had been the exclamation point at the end of a long, sad sentence. I didn't want to look back. I couldn't help it. The memories came at me in an overwhelming rush. The first image was of Grandfather and Uncle Robert having an awful argument, the first I'd ever heard or seen between adults. I must have been 10 years old at the time. I'd had to do with Uncle Robert's use, or rather misuse, of a loan he'd received from Grandfather. Apparently, Uncle Robert had used the funds unwisely, and it was causing a major rift between them. I remember how Uncle Robert was ranting and raving about the modern world needing modern ideas and Grandpa's heated reply. But Uncle Robert did throw it all away and soon moved to St. Louis, leaving behind the mountain of debt, which Grandpa was obligated to pay off. They never spoke to each other again. The next thread to unravel took a large piece of our hearts, the death of my cousin, Rory. Rory wasn't much older than me, 12 years old at the time, when Uncle James took him on his first pheasant hunt. At one point, my uncle had set down his shotgun. Rory picked it up and it went off. I still can't think about it directly. I'm afraid I'll see the image in my mind's eye of Rory picking up the weapon, and then my brain shuts off before the next scene appears. The vision too unbearable. It was a tragedy that soon spelled the end of the marriage between James and Ruth. James moved to Duluth while Ruth stayed on. Though Grandpa never said so, he was always sorry that neither of his sons cared to take up farming. The sudden rush of images conjured my father, Dwight, who'd wanted to be an artist. It was a great hope, but a hopeless journey. Dad took a mundane job in town while he slaved away at what came to be known behind his back as his monster pieces. He and my mother, Meg, had gone to school together, and it seemed a natural prescription that they would grow up and marry. It all seemed to hold such promise. During those years, we lived on at the farm with my grandparents, since my father couldn't afford otherwise. The problems, painful as they were, still had no direct bearing on the direction of my life. My younger cousin, Lily, was the bearer of the news, and I still remember her exact words. She was on the bed and she wasn't wearing anything. My dad was in there with her and he was just getting dressed. They both looked at me like I'd done something wrong, but I didn't. Walking in on them was an accident, honest. I was sick and got sent home from school early. My mother and Uncle Monroe. That night, my mother knew that Lily had told me. She could see it in my eyes, hear it in my voice. She prompted me to confess. "Yes, I know," I told her. "How could you? You're not old enough to understand. 13 isn't old enough. Dad and Aunt Judy are both going to hate you. I hate you." I was hysterical. My mother shook me, tried to calm me down, and I finally froze into silence. "They aren't going to know, Evangeline. Promise me you won't tell them." Her blue eyes were pleading with me. "Lily will tell," I answered flatly. "Monroe is going to talk to her," my mother said. "Hurting others isn't going to solve anything. Monroe will be able to explain that to her." But Uncle Monroe couldn't. Lily told her mother, and the whirlpool of deceit widened to take us all in. I couldn't pretend to understand the complicated relationships of adults. All I could understand was their fallout. I withdrew into myself while their drama played itself out. First came comprehension, then accusations, then separation for both couples. Later, somehow, Monroe and Julie resolved their differences. My parents never could get it together again. My father settled in Westcott and eventually became a high school art teacher. For the most part, Mama disappeared from our lives, dropping a postcard from time to time from places out west, Portland, San Diego, or L.A., while I stayed on with my grandparents. Both of my parents always made promises to come back and get me, but somehow those promises never came true. I curled my legs under me on the bed and turned off the small bedside lamp. I rubbed the velvet nap of the Bible. The book seemed so thick. The twister that killed my grandfather brought on the final chaos of those years. He'd been driving home from town that day. His car was found in a ditch, his body nearby. It was then that Grandma Hermione sold the farm to a big company. She just couldn't handle it anymore. Now, the ill winds had come full circle. I tried to suppress all of these thoughts. They were only sucking me back into the shadows of the past without casting any light. It wasn't my nature to spend time dwelling on the past, yet I was doing it now. Life had to move on. I had to move on. I reminded myself it was not all tragedy. Across the room from me slept two wonderful children, my children, and thinking of them always put me in a state of grace. Tonight, it wasn't working so well. Thinking of the children brought on thoughts of my husband, Jake. My mind was spiraling on the past because all of it was bound to converge in the present with Grandma Hermione's funeral. So many of the relatives would arrive here to bid their final goodbyes. As Clint had said, Hermione had been well-loved. I was too restless to sleep. I wrapped myself in the robe behind the door and wandered downstairs to the kitchen. I realized Clint was staring at the robe I wore. It must have belonged to his wife, Carlene, who died 2 years ago of multiple sclerosis after 14 years of struggle. Carlene had only been 40 at the time, 7 years older than me. "I'm sorry to interrupt," I said. Clint raised a hand in welcome. "No, no," he answered. "It was the robe. I still keep some things around to remind me of her. It was almost as if she were here," I finished. "Clint, I didn't realize." "No, no reason why you should. Could you use some coffee?" I shook my head. "No, just company. May I sit down?" "Surely." It was my turn to be startled. I felt like he'd read my mind just then. Perhaps the darker hours of night brought out kinships between people. All I know for sure was that I desperately needed to talk about it. There are going to be a lot of reminders of our family misfortunes in the next few days, and quite frankly, I'm afraid, I confessed. "The funeral," Clint acknowledged. "He'd lived here all his life, just as I had. Clint Tobias knew my family, not only its joys, but also its tribulations." I bit my lip and nodded. If there were any more tears inside of me, they would have streaked my swollen face, but I was drained of them. I couldn't save Hermione," I murmured. "No, Evangeline, you couldn't," Clint said. "Big difference between couldn't and wouldn't. That's where the line of guilt lies, and there's no guilt in couldn't." His insight amazed me. "That's the kindest thing anyone's ever said to me," I said. "I won't forget it, Clint, not ever. Two children and one on the way, that makes for a lot of responsibility," he said. I didn't owe him an explanation about the pregnancy, and I didn't feel he was asking for one, but my need to talk surpassed my need for privacy. My pregnancy was another thing burning a permanent headache in my brain. Jake came to see me about getting back together. I offered hesitantly. We made an effort at reconciliation. That's when I got pregnant. I'm afraid I wanted so much for us to get back together for the sake of the kids. "Well, what about your sake, Evangeline?" I shrugged uncomfortably. I don't understand love, Clint. I was hopeful, confused, all those things when Jake showed up. But in the end, it didn't work. He went back on the road again. I should have known he would. "You loved your grandmother, and you have your children," Clint said. "You can't say you don't know about love. Between a man and woman, I don't," I amended. "That's where it goes wrong for me." "It doesn't have to go wrong." For a moment, I wasn't sure I understood him. Then I realized I did. We'd suddenly reached an intimacy that was too close for comfort. "It's going to be a long day tomorrow," I said. I better try again for sleep. Surely, he said, his voice impassive, his eyes sympathetic, but withdrawn. The next day was exhausting, not from the physical activity, but from the mental anguish that surrounded me. We needed to move clothes and supplies to the tenant house, and I also needed the cleansing effect of bringing some order out of all of this chaos. The stairs to the farmhouse were still sturdy, and at one point I stood at the window of the second floor, front bedroom, Hermione's room. The windows were all shattered, but the room remained eerily intact. Another arbitrary, cosmic joke. How often had Hermione looked out this window, 1,000 glances mirroring 1,000 thoughts, perhaps watching for a passerby, or looking for me, or remembering Grandpa? I needed mementos of her, things to carry me into the future. I knew there were photographs on the filing cabinet beside her. I knelt now, pulled out the top drawer, and thumbed the alphabetical listings. Medical under M, farm receipts under F, all the essential business literature. The photographs would be in the lower drawer. I opened it, found the pictures and more files, those with names attached. I reached into one that said Robert and came up with an envelope of baby teeth and little notes to the tooth fairy. It overwhelmed me to think of my heavy-set eldest uncle as a child, writing letters with the hopes of finding money under his pillow. I reached for the e-file and found my own baby teeth, a lock of hair and an envelope addressed to me, perhaps a birthday card I'd tossed aside that Hermione had saved. Mama, somebody's here, Noah shouted from downstairs. I gathered up the Evangeline file, an old photograph album, and some loose pictures and went to the window. It was Robert and Bernadette. They'd stopped to pick up Ruth on the way, and now all three were walking the ravaged property in stunned silence. When I got outside, Ruth, dressed in her familiar black, was the first to speak. I wanted to come yesterday, Evangeline, but I just couldn't bear it, she said tearfully. I almost didn't come today. How can you stand it, dear? The answer was I couldn't, but I didn't have a choice. We'll go through it, I said, or we'll get through it. We have to. Ruth's eyes were swollen like mine. I didn't know how much longer I could face family and make small talk to fill in the empty spaces of our relationships. Ruth seemed to understand the pleading in my eyes. She wandered away to search through her own memories. Robert took her place, sharing sympathy and making his own small talk about the car dealership where he worked. He clearly had no way of handling this. James was next to arrive. When he saw Ruth, he stopped dead in his tracks for a second, then moved toward me. I don't believe it. A second twister came down on this family. It simply isn't fair, he said quietly, looking at the ground and shaking his head like a shell-shocked soldier. The tornado saved your mother from a drawn-out, agonizing death, I answered, in an effort to soften his grief. Yes, I suppose it did. Still, nobody wants to die. How could she wish for... He paused, thinking it over, and didn't pursue it. The funeral arrangements, he said finally. Is there anything I can do? Because of Hermione's illness, they were already made some time ago. I'll take care of what needs to be done, I said. She'll be buried next to Grandfather. Not far from Rory's grave, Uncle James whispered and added. How's Ruth been getting on? I wanted to tell him to go ask her, but I knew he wouldn't. They were separated by more than distance. I don't see her often, but she seems to be holding her own. I said, I wish she'd find some happiness, but she won't even try. Uncle James had never remarried, nor had Uncle, or aunt, that is, Aunt Ruth. If only he could help her and himself, but wishful thinking wouldn't make it so. As the afternoon wore on, conversation wore out. Robert and Bernadette went back into town with Ruth to look for a motel. James stayed a while longer and promised to come back early in the morning. There were other visitors, friends, neighbors, strangers driving by to take a look at the devastation, some stopping for a moment to give condolences, all of it a blur. Later that evening, I was wrenched back to reality when my father showed up. The inevitable small talk ensued between hesitant hugs. There's no way to make this right, Dad said to me finally. But I felt it was time for me to make something right, or at least get it straight. There's so much that can't be made right, I answered. The truth is, you never came for me, Dad. It was always next week, next month, next year, always next to nothing. Dad shook his head sadly and looked at the ground. Child, that was such a long time ago. I wanted to so many times, but something always got in the way. I assumed at first that your mama was caring for you. Later on, I knew you were better off with your grandfolks than you'd ever be with me. My mama loved you and wanted to keep you, Evangeline. I wanted your love, I blurted out. I did what I thought was best, my father answered, a painful expression in his eyes that I couldn't read. And then you up and married Jake, and I knew things would be all right for you, or at least I thought they would. But then it was too late. You were off the hook, Dad. My father gave me a hard look. Evangeline, this isn't the time or the place to bring this up. There never was a good time for it, and there never will be, I shot back. He looked at me sadly. You've grown into a cruel, unfeeling woman. Evangeline, I'm sorry for you. Nothing could be more cruel and unfeeling than his words. I hoped for healing, but this was only leading to more hurt, more than I could bear. I better go, my father said finally. You always do, I said, meeting his eyes. I'll see you at the funeral, he said. This is a funeral right here, right now. And with my bitter words ringing in his ears, my father turned away and left the tenant house. I felt weak all over. What had I done? I followed him outside and watched him wave goodbye to Grace and Noah. He went to his car, but found it blocked by a white sedan parked behind it. It was a rental car, and my mother was behind the wheel. Dad approached her slowly as she got out of the car. Her blonde hair cascaded around her shoulders. She seemed strikingly beautiful, so much that she took my breath away. She said something to my father, but I couldn't hear her or any of my father's reply. He turned away from her suddenly, got into his car, and drove it over the grass in a wide arc, wheels spinning. Then he was gone. My children ran toward me. Who is that? Grace demanded, pointing at my mother. Your grandmother, I told her stiffly. She's so pretty to be a grandmother, Grace murmured in awe. She looks like you, Mama. My daughter looked up at me and smiled. I held her close, but she isn't like me, Grace. What happened? Noah asked. Grandpa Dwight was in such a hurry. I didn't answer. As my mother came closer, I felt myself transfixed by her blue eyes. "It had been a long time," she said finally. I wasn't prepared for another confrontation, especially not in front of the children, so I kept my silence. I just nodded and listened to her greet her children, watched her touch Grace's hair, kiss Noah on the cheek, all the while saying nice, bland things, ending with the words of sorrow about Hermione. I could see the lines around her eyes now, the aging she was so careful to keep hidden with makeup. "I won't stay long. I know how hard this has been for you, Evangeline," she said, "and I don't want to make it more difficult." "How did you find out?" I asked. "I had no way of reaching you." "I stay in touch with Robert," she answered simply. "I never felt comfortable communicating with you, Evangeline, except for a postcard here and there, which wouldn't require a response. What could you have said to me that I didn't already know?" The question hung in the air between us like a storm cloud. Sensing the tension, Grace tugged at Noah's sleeve. "Come on," she urged, and they left us to face our own demons. I went back inside the tenant house. My mother followed. "How's Dwight getting along?" she asked. "I don't know him any better than I know you," I answered. "What did he say to you just now before he left?" My mother shrugged. "All the usual recriminations," she said. "Those were bad times, better left to history." I turned to stare at her. "And these are good times?" She sat down on the worn-out couch and folded her hands in her laps. "Let's not fight, Evangeline. I won't be here long." "There's too much coming at me all at once," I cried out, hot tears welling in my eyes. My mother looked down at the floor. I didn't come here to make your life miserable. By being here isn't about you, Evangeline." I glared at her. "Nothing you've ever done has been about me, has it?" There was no getting through to her any more than I'd been able to get through to my father. I could see it in those blue eyes, and she confirmed it with her next words. "You sound like a spoiled little girl, Evangeline. You know, we all have to grow up sometime, and that includes you." As if she knew anything about me. "Mama, I could take that from someone who'd been around for me, but from a stranger as you've become, it's downright ludicrous. At least give me one good reason why you left me. Don't I deserve at least that much?" She mellowed slightly. "It wasn't because of you," she said quietly. I was disappointed in my life. I craved adventure, romance. I thought Dwight was going to do it for me, but it was a crushing, boring life, and worst of all, it held no hope of improving. I wasn't just playing with fire. I think I created the flames to force myself out of this life, and they did. They gave me my chance to escape, Evangeline," she said vehemently, looking up at me with those flames burning in her eyes. "Yes, Mama, you escaped and you left me behind," I said, meeting her gaze. "I'm sorry I hurt you, Evangeline, but being stifled in this place would have killed me, probably both of us, if I'd stayed around. I wouldn't have been a fit mother, or, for that matter, a fit human being." "Are you now?" I asked her. She sat back against the couch, her shoulders slumping. It took me a long time to realize there wasn't much more out there than what was here. But by then, it was far too late. Too late for me, that is. But I've got a wandering spirit anyway. Being free lets me break away from my own ghosts. "You know, it ruined my life," I murmured, barely able to speak. She looked up at me, eyes harsh again. How could it have ruined your life? She demanded defensively. You have children, a life here. I married a man I didn't know how to love in order to escape my nightmares. I was young and foolish, and I didn't realize just how frozen I was inside by what you and Dad had done. All I was doing was reacting, reaching out without my understanding of what it meant. I trusted nothing, nobody. My own bid for freedom just turned into a larger prison. That's how you ruined my life, my undermining my ability to love, to have faith in anything. My mother sat up straight as she composed herself. You seem to have given this a lot of thought, Evangeline, she said, seemingly unperturbed by my outburst. But the main point eludes you. We're all in charge of ourselves, Evangeline. If you ruined your life, you did it yourself. I ought to know I did it to myself, and I take the blame for that. But I don't take the blame for you. Whether you like it or not, you're on your own, daughter. I've always been on my own, I said, jolted by how easily she could twist things around to suit her own purpose. My mother had the survival instincts of a cat. Had she stayed, just what kind of mother would she have been? We might as well argue this forever, she continued dryly, but I'm not going to be here for it. So your argument is going to be with yourself, Evangeline. I'll see myself out and join you again at the funeral, she said evenly. Tell the children. Well, I don't know what you should tell them. With that, she left me to stare down at the photographs strewn across the kitchen table. I brushed them aside and picked up the envelope from Hermione's file, the one with my name on it. As I idly stared at it, I realized the flap was still glued shut. Had it never been opened? Nearby on the table lay a photograph of my mother when she was a little girl. Looking at it sent a homesick-like sensation through me that left me feeling dizzy. I thought of the graveyard and all the family ghosts that would surround me tomorrow. How could I ever face them? But face them I did as we gathered around Grandma Hermione's grave, Robert and Bernadette huddled together, James and Ruth separated by the coffin, and last-minute arrivals, that is, Monroe and Judy on either side of our minister. Farther to one side, my father watched like a bystander, and well to the back, my mother stood alone. Clint Tobias, Cousin Lily, and a few other friends of Hermione's were circled behind the children and me. The only one missing was Jake. I placed a rose on top of the coffin and lifted a sheet of paper from my purse. All the last words, the last prayers had been spoken, all but one, and this one came from Hermione herself. I found this note among her things, I said. I wanted to share it with all of you who surround her in love today. Dear Evangeline, I read, the cancer gets worse every day. Soon I won't have the strength to write anything. When you find this letter, I'll know I've gone on to a better place. I will be with your grandfather once again, and I am at peace with this. I do wish, though, for all the members of our beautiful family to achieve peace with themselves and with each other. Evangeline, my dear one, bring everyone back together, not for my sake, but rather for your own sake and for their sakes. It's a long, lonely road when you're closed off from love. It is a hard road. Don't travel it any longer, Evangeline. Love to you and to all of my family, Hermione. I held the letter to my breast. This is not something I can do, I cried, tears streaming down my face. A small bird fluttered its wings over the grave. The hum of heavy trucks reached us from the highway over the horizon. "Not without help," a voice said. It was Ruth. "Have we not all grieved enough over our personal sorrows?" Slowly, she circled the grave site until she stood before James. She reached out to him, and he took her in his arms. Then she and James walked away from the group, headed hand in hand for the grave of their son, Rory. Monroe and Judy walked over to my mother. "We have sustained ourselves," Judy said, "and grown stronger over the years. In the long run, you've helped us, not hurt us, Margaret." Aunt Judy touched my mother's cheek, an act of forgiveness. My father had come to stand beside me. "I failed you," he said. "No," I answered, "I failed myself by keeping so much hate in my heart." My mother joined us. "Will you forgive us?" she asked me solemnly, tears shimmering in her beautiful eyes. "It's the only way I'll ever be able to forgive myself," I said. We do not pick our parents, but we make our own choices in how we deal with them. All that time, I'd felt so guilty, as if I'd done something terribly wrong, and that guilt had turned to such deep anger. The only thing I'd ever done wrong was let it all fester inside of me. Grandma Hermione had been right. It was up to me to change. I embraced my mother and father. When we got back to the house, an 18-wheeler was parked along the roadside. The others who were with me stared at the truck. "It's Dad," Noah called out cheerfully. Clint Tobias gave me a wistful smile. "Come on, kids," he said to Noah and Grace. "Let's head on up to the house. You can see him later." I walked alone to the truck and got in on the passenger side. "I'm sorry I'm late," Jake said at once. He shook his head and placed his hands on the steering wheel. "Story of my life." He looked tired, exhausted. He'd come a long way, but not nearly as far as I've come, I thought. I studied the angles of his face, the sandy hair, the sad gray eyes. "You're here now, Jake, and that's what matters." I handed him Grandma Hermione's letter. When he looked up at me, moments later, Jake had tears in his eyes. "I've always loved you, Evangeline. I just never could get through to you, not really." He stared out with the windshield at the desolation, out of the windshield at the desolation of the ruined homestead. "We need to rebuild that old farmhouse," he said quietly, after a moment when he could talk again. "We'll start rebuilding now," I answered, and I leaned over and kissed him. Okay, that's the end of that story. And that's going to do it for this romance program. As always, thank you so much for listening. This has been Volunteer Ginny Yost for Sun Sounds. Take care of yourselves. Have a great week. Bye-bye.